Taj Mahal, welcome. I know you've come to the Fox, this is like 2 or 3 years now in a row. I know you play all over the world, but can you talk a little bit about this venue here in Tucson and why you continually come back here?
I'm a working man, man. I do 125 to 150 dates a year, and if there's an audience that want to hear the music, get up and dance and shout and have a good time with me, then I feel excited about going there and doing that.
I think it's important to talk to you about the idea of music that was captured live. You know, growing up, seeing your father play, even in the early part of your career, there was no multi-tracking. The music was not manufactured, and it was done right on the spot and maybe just one take. Talk a little bit about how the idea of knowing that you had to hit it, one take, no charts, you got to burn. How did that help you to develop your musical craft and your vocabulary?
Those were the rules of the music. It was, first of all, the rules were that were put together by the people who the music was there to soothe in the first place. And they had very high standards for what you could do. You couldn't even get up and play just because you got an instrument in your hand. You know, you look like you want to play. You had to prove to people that you could play under every kind of circumstance, you know. And the level of which you were deemed to have to put out in terms of your musical ability and the ability to move an audience, you know, it was way up at the top, man. It was not just something that happened here and happened there. It was very serious, you know. So live is all you got. You know, everything else is a distraction after that. A lot of people lived off those Robert Johnson records. But when I heard that stuff, it sounded like some weird tinny blues to me. You know, I didn't dislike the guy. I thought he definitely was a bluesman. But I heard that music live from players in my neighborhood, you know, who played it live. So a recording of it was like certainly removed from standing in front of a guy with an acoustic guitar playing that stuff. And that's the whole thing. I started when I first came to Los Angeles. What I discovered was that, I don't know, the trolls had gotten a hold of the music business and the music, they thought. And they thought that they had the ability to just, you know, stamp it out just like everything else. They just about ruined it for anybody that could play. And so, you know, playing is coming back now, which was really good. As always, people were on the way to playing, but a lot of them went further out where, you know, nobody was interested in coming after with a tape recorder to play with, tape down what they play, except people who knew what they were doing, you know. And I'm talking about, you know, Albert Ayler and Sonny Chirac and, you know, James Blood Ulmer, you know, Archie Shepp, and, you know, cats like, you know, out there, Cecil Taylor and, okay, so some people recorded that stuff, but they wasn't chasing them, trying to put them into some bag that would make them popular music, and then furthermore, chew all the flavor out of the gum, you know, along with the sugar. So my object was that, hey, nobody's doing this. They're not going to do this. I would know musicians when I was coming up that were really incredible, and then they would get connected up to the machine, and that was the last time you heard incredible come out of them. Somehow or another, that machine would chew them up and spit them out, and they were never the same. So that wasn't what I was interested in. Hey, you know what? Maybe they won't get it. Maybe they won't even get it in this lifetime, but that's not the reason why I'm playing. 15 minutes of fame ain't worth, you can't put that in the balance of a lifetime of playing incredible live music night after night after night with the joy of what that's all about. You know, and connected correctly to your ancestors, you know, priceless.
This weekend's show is intergenerational in that it features Taj's band, along with Fredericks Brown, a dynamic duo comprised of pianist Stephanie Brown and Taj's daughter, Diva. So talk about your musical relationship with your dad.
Our musical relationship is one that is held in like quite high respect. You know, me and my father, when it comes to music, I've always done my own thing. It's kind of my personality. And so when we started working together, because I had spent so many years working at my craft and building my career, when I got up on stage, he really treats me like a peer. He doesn't baby me at all while I'm working with him, you know, which I feel helps me grow more in the end because I know when he really, really thinks that something I've done is of merit. And with his, you know, legacy and his career spanning decades, having his honest input is always more important to me than anybody just, you know, brushing up your ego and telling you that you're wonderful, even if you're not, you know.
I will stand for you. Would you stand for me? Everybody deserves to be free. I lend a hand to you. Would you lend a hand to me?
It's quite a bit difficult and difficult for the younger people to start out these days, you know, and Steve has been quite a bit of time down in New Zealand, and so she met Stephen Brown, and they connected down there and did a lot of different things musically, and then they came up here to try to, you know, because this is the market, and it's really difficult. So I think she has a tremendous amount of talent. She's proven she's got the energy that it takes to pull it off. She's a hard worker, and she's been at it for a number of years, and she's been involved in theater and many other things at the same time, you know, so it's all really good, and it's all exciting for me to say, hey, you know, here's a platform for my siblings, you know, my children to come out and make it with what they do. The people most of the time don't really have any idea until after their set is over, and I call Diva up to work with me, really even know that she's my daughter, because she can earn her props on her own. The bottom line is that, you know, either you bring it or you don't, you know, and she does.
Taj, how would you describe past and current generations' adherence to music history and the understanding of our ancestry?
You know, I was open to the music, man. I don't care where you're coming from. The music's all right. You know, I'm good. But I saw that a lot of cats was just like, you know, throwing the baby out with the bathwater with the blues. Somehow or another, they assimilate the notion that you have to somewhat either put down or destroy the generation before you. And I thought that that was not a very bright way to do things, you know. It made it real hard for the youngsters coming up to have any idea what to do, you know, what kind of music to play. And, you know, that you didn't lose anything by passing it from one generation to the next. You know, most of the time you gain because you give them a foothold to work with so they know where they're coming from.
I'm curious, though, when you talk about having to demolish what became before you, I mean, is it just the advent of loud rock and roll?
The concept is that they can't live in the generation that they're in without either saying that the generation before them wasn't worth anything, instead of figuring out that they're going to realize is that they were too deep in the forest to see what was going on. Had they stepped out far enough to where they could get some kind of global perspective, they would realize that time is not, you know, there's no line in nature. You know, if it's energy that's put out there, it don't disappear. And that, you know, much of what they think and what they were doing is based upon somebody else's idea of what your life is supposed to be. And when I talk to, play with, and go and hang out with musicians from different parts of the world, you know, Africa, South Central America, the Caribbean, Australasia, South Pacific, it's always about the old guys that could play great and played simple and did this, and that's what we're trying to do. It's always somebody trying to get that. But more so, the traditions that we come out of are amazing in the sense that in the 400 years, 500 years, however you want to start calling it, 350 years, that many of us, all of us are from the Great Rift Valley, but in a recent departure from Africa within the last 500 years, a lot of people don't have no idea that the music still went on. Everybody still did what they did. So they're up to date with what it is. And now they're also adding into what it is that has happened and developed, you know, in other places outside, say, for instance, the South with the blues and the South with jazz, you know, the Caribbean with all the different types of music that happened there, cumbia, you know, candomblé, and it's been now reabsorbed back into the music scene, back into the mother's womb, and it's coming coming back out again. And it behooves musicians and the general American population to wake the blankety blank up and realize that if you don't get back to the source of this, the best you can do is come up with some kind of mutation or hybrid that ain't going to go for but so long before it's going to need a transfusion of the real stuff. You know, it's like, what's happening? You know as well as I do that all these young kids are now all of a sudden discovering vinyl. Oh, my God. I didn't get rid of my vinyl. I didn't get rid of mine. I'm still listening to vinyl. Why would I get rid of it when that was the pinnacle of what you could do with sound? As long as it's got to do with making the best sound and getting the best sound back to you that can be possible through a mechanical, technical way of doing it, wonderful. You know, but you got to try to deliver it. So when I put on Muddy Waters folk singer, Muddy is in the room. Now, I'm not listening down some tube to something. It hasn't been compressed into some digital numbers. I'm hearing the sound of that guy in the room at the time he recorded now.